We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the RotoWire Prospect Podcast. I'm your host, James Anderson, and we're brought to you by Fantrax, as always. Got my good buddy Jeff Ponce from Baseball America here, and we're just going to talk about prospects who have really been making waves in the spring. Some of these guys are going to break camp with their big clubs. Some of them will not. And Jeff's seen a lot of these guys in person, so it's going to be a lot of fun to kind of pick his brain. But Jeff, let's just start with Wyatt Langford here. You haven't seen him in person, but like, where are we talking historically here? I've told people this is the most impressive kind of from the moment a guy was drafted from college, like fast forward to that first spring training. I've never seen a college hitter perform the way Langford has. Where does he kind of stand, like, historically, just in terms of best pro debuts of a hitter that you can recall?
Yeah, and, you know, he kind of falls into a funny category where he's kind of always been so good that I'll never really get an opportunity to see him. Like, yeah. I want to see him in an SEC game, like, because he's not an ACC guy, right? And that's what I have in Boston College locally to me. So that's what I see. He was too good to be on the Cape at any point in time. Like, he was already a collegiate national team guy. And his teams always made really long runs in college. And then, you know, was drafted by a West Coast-ish, if you want to say that, team that doesn't have affiliates around me. So he was just a guy that I was never going to see. And he moved so quickly that it's not like I could even take a trip to go in to see him. So he's also an Arizona-based spring training team. Wasn't an Arizona Fall League. So, like, this guy is sort of like the rare bird where he's not really going to spend almost any time in the minor leagues. And just looking at the numbers, just the hitting side of things, right? We don't care. We won't talk defense. We can talk that in a little bit. But just the stuff that we really, really care about in fantasy, like the end zone whiff rate was like absolutely insane after the draft. And I'm gonna pull it up just so that way I can be 100% with all this. So 184 plate appearances. So this is the totality of his pro debut. 415 xWOBA, which is crazy. A 106.8 90th percentile EV. A 36% sweet spot. Average EV was not a little bit over 90. Hit a ball 112. Overall miss rate was 18.7%, with a 12.8% in zone whiff rate and a 16.8% chase rate with a 36% swing rate. So about a 20% split between chase and swing, which is an acceptable range. It means he's so selective, but he barely misses the pitches that he hits, and he hits a majority of the pitches that he makes contact with really hard and at good angles. For example, his pull side launch angle, 9.5 degrees. That's really, really good. That's like optimized to hell. 14 degree launch angle on balls 95 plus, And then just the 14.3 degree launch angle overall, because most of the balls he hits are 95 plus, frankly. So like it was just the data across the board was unbelievable. You know, one of it looked like a major leaguer that, you know, for some reason got 200 or close to plate appearances in the minor leagues. It was just outrageous. And then we got some conflicting reports on the run grades, but if you watched him in college or have seen him, he is an above average runner. I don't know what the stolen base totals will be, or if he'll even run that much just based on lineup position and just sort of what his role will be. But I think like you can pencil in this guy as at least like a top three rounder for a whole bunch of years with good batting average, you know, good combination of runs and RBIs. And yeah, I think he's got 30 plus home run power just based on the optimized angles, the amount of contact he makes and how frequently he hits it hard. Even his miss hits are, you know, hit well enough that they could go out of the park. I mean, and you're looking for, those are the best kind of guys, right? Maybe he doesn't have the 30-30 upside that some other players might have. And so maybe he doesn't hit that Acuna, Julio, Bobby Witt Jr., Mookie sort of stratosphere, right? But he's still really, really good. And I think he'll get enough opportunity in like a corner outfield spot filling in that he'll hold outfield eligibility for a lot of years.
Yeah, we're of course talking about Wyatt Langford of the Rangers, the number four overall pick last year. Yeah, I mean, he's really just put up video game numbers at every stop. What would you project for home runs for him this season if he spent, if he just played like 150 games in the big leagues?
You know, it's a really good question. And just to be honest, I'm pulling up the projection systems behind me. Yeah. And like, I knew I would take the over on all of them. But like, I tend to fall more in line with like Steamer and Zips that are 24 home runs versus like ATC in the bat, which are 19 and 16. I think it's more like 24 is the floor. If he sees like 600 plate appearances, I think he could hit 25 to 30, you know, home runs. Yeah. More than 30, you're probably asking for a lot, but you're getting good batting average. And if you're in an OBP league, you're also getting on base ability. So like, he's kind of like that sort of transcendent bat that regardless of whether he has speed or not, he's still probably going to return like top three run value pretty easily.
Yeah. Yeah. Wyatt Langford certainly going to have the highest ADP among all rookies the rest of draft season. You got anything else you want to add on him before we move on to some guys you've gotten live looks on in Florida?
I think the only other thing I would say is, you know, the Rangers are just in such a great position with two bites at the apple with, you know, the prospect and incentive opportunity for the pick. So they have a really good shot at getting that pick. And I think for a team like them, it makes a lot of sense. Simply because them picking at the back of the first round, adding that additional big bonus pull number really allows them to do some things with the negotiating table. And we know how the baseball draft works. It's not like other sports where, you know, that slot money can be played with in a pool with some of the other picks. So could allow the Rangers to just keep on building. And that's, I think, the goal of this sort of pick. But other teams, and we'll talk about that later, I think, with Skeens, maybe it doesn't make sense to go after the pick.
So you and I want to shout out to Dan Fu, great dynasty player who I got to hang out with while you were drafting your NL labor squad in Florida a couple weeks ago. But you and Dan were at the Orioles Pirates showdown, which was just looked like it was a great game to be at. Jackson Holliday, you know, wasn't necessarily, obviously MLB was trying to make it all about like Holliday versus Skeens. I kind of came away just really impressed with like Skeens and Bubba Chandler, just from like what I saw on video and stuff. But I mean, that's going to be the way it goes with like a pitcher and a hitter, unless the hitter gets the guy. So Holliday, like every time I talk about him with like a non-prospect person, the first thing they talk about is just how young he looks. And obviously he still looks incredibly young, but how's he looking in the spring?
Yeah, I think, you know, he's young looking, but if you've seen, and this is really weird, but if you see a picture of like his parents together with his siblings, he looks very much like his mom, just like same face. And she kind of has a very similar look to Jackson, where Ethan looks like Matt. He's bigger. He's actually taller than Jackson is. So I think that's just sort of the look of the family more. And he just is a person that's always going to kind of look, you know, younger than he probably is. But you know, I don't think we're going to see the K issues that we've seen in the spring. It's a small sample. And obviously he struck out against Skeens, but you know, he was up 3-1 in that at bat. And those were two nasty pitches. He hit him with a back foot slider that was at, you know, whatever, 91 miles an hour. That had some nasty bite on it. And then, you know, hit him with a changeup off the plate. It was a really good sequence, frankly. So, you know, that was one of those times where that trumps it. But this is a guy that we saw even for a small bit of time in AAA. You know, he's still hitting the ball. He still hits the ball hard. In that game, actually, I think I posted the open side shot today. He had a ball that was 100 miles per hour off the bat. It was a line out to the opposite field, and it more or less was like a, hey, how do you do by the third baseman? Kind of thanks for hitting it right to my glove, you know? So it was kind of like the negative BABIP special. So like I've seen him sting the ball a few times. I've seen him in a few major league games. I haven't obviously seen him in backfield stuff because he hasn't been playing in those games. But I think he's ready. And I think just from a mentality standpoint, I've had an opportunity to interview him twice via video and then once in person. And he's just a really mature guy. You know, just for how young he is, you know, I'm 42 and he's a kid to me, but I think that probably does him a disservice even calling him that. I mean, he's definitely a man. He gets it. I think he's already engaged or married or whatever. And, you know, he grew up in a baseball family. It's not just his dad. I mean, his uncle is the head coach at Oklahoma State, which is a big time Power Five, top 25 school. His grandfather was a longtime college coach and coached on the Cape Cod League, as well as in a variety of different roles throughout the college game and like a 40, 50 year career. So he's got many generations sort of like behind him that can kind of show him the way, grew up around a clubhouse, and it's just a baseball rat. But is definitely like an articulate, mature and you kid, you know, you pick up on that it's like, all right, this isn't your typical 19, 20 year old guy. So I think he's ready. And personally, I like the suppressed price and redraft. I grabbed him in a DC that Dan and I did the other night. I kind of pounded the table for where we took him, and it was, you know, outside pick 100. I can tell you that. It might have been closer to like 200. And I think there's a real chance that he's their leadoff guy because he fits that role better than anybody that they've had in the organization. They kind of had needed that top of the lineup guy who gets on base a ton, and that can make the rest of the lineup really fit together nicely, which had already scored a lot of runs. I think he can kind of be the catalyst at the top, and it wouldn't shock me. I think I put this in our bold predictions that go in the magazine. I think go online in a couple of days. I predicted he'd have 100 runs scored as a rookie. So that's kind of what I'm banking on there.
Yeah, I mean, if he scores 100 runs, that'll be hard for that to not be his most impactful category. I've been sort of, in terms of when people ask what I think like his ceiling is this year, I'm kind of thinking like 15 homers, 25 steals. I think the stolen bases, I think, are where the projection systems are maybe most off with him. Because I think, and a lot of times with these prospects, when they're just absolutely dominating and they're just, you know, you're not necessarily going to see the full stolen base output in the minor leagues the way, like, you know, I know Julio Rodriguez surprised people. He didn't surprise, like if you watch him in the AFL, he was already putting that speed to work. But do you think that's kind of the range? Like, 20 plus steals, and then you hope that he gets you to kind of 12, 15 homer, something like that?
Yeah, I think his big categories are going to be runs, on base percentage, and batting average. It's a really good hit tool. He gets the bat and the ball. He can turn on, you know, he can turn on something on the inside and hit it to his pull side. He can hit something on the outside of the plate. The plate coverage is really, really good, though he's not a huge guy. It almost seems like he's using a longer bat just because of how well he manipulates the barrel. But yeah, I think, you know, if he hit 18 home runs as a rookie, I think he'd be really happy. I think it will probably be, I think the 14 to like 16 range is kind of what I'm comfortable with. It's that ballpark. And I think just the strength of his game is like hitting a lot of doubles, you know, a lot of balls in the gap. I think he'll grow into a little bit more power as he ages. But this season, I'd say like 15, I think he can hit 280 or better and score 80 or more runs and steal, like you said, 25 bags, I think is reasonable. He's going to be in a different role there. You know, hopefully he's healthy all season long, gets a lot of at bats because, like I said, he gets to the top of that lineup. He gets hits. He also gets a lot of walks. So he has opportunities to run. It's just a matter of like, how often will he get the green light in Baltimore? That's kind of the big question.
Yeah. I mean, I think a while ago, you compared him to me to sort of like a Wander Franco, like obviously like best version of Wander Franco.
Baseball player.
Right. Right. So yeah, that's kind of the type of talent I think people should think they're kind of investing in. And like, so for anyone who's on the fence, like, we think he's on the opening day roster, right?
Yeah. I would be really shocked if he's not. You know, and he's held his own in spring. Like I said, there's been some strikeouts, but he's still hitting 300 with a 550 slug, 250 ISO. He's got a homer. He's stolen a couple of bases. You know, he's seen 42 plate appearances. So they're giving him run out there. And I just think the point that they're at, why not have this guy here now with the rest of this team? And, you know, they're at a point where they have so many additional pieces. It's like, who are you going to trade? Who's going to help us get another starter? I think that's kind of where you're at if you're the Orioles. So there's no reason with this guy not to call him up. He has a great chance of winning Rookie of the Year, especially in the AL where you're not competing against a seasoned Japanese professional who's won the MVP and the equivalent of the Cy Young as many times as anybody has by the age of 25 in the history of like the Nippon Baseball League. So like, I think you're kind of in a really good spot. And once again, I think they're a team that benefits greatly from that additional bonus money that they're going to see this year. It's going to allow them to do their Orioles thing where they underslot maybe somebody in the first, pull somebody down in the second, and all of a sudden they're drafting, you know, a couple of Gunnar Henderson upside-y Kobe Mayo prospect types out of high school. And, you know, so goes the machine. Like if, you know, you want to be the Dodgers, that's how they've done it.
Yeah. So we think Holiday is making the Orioles. You mentioned Kobe Mayo in passing. I was looking at the depth chart a couple weeks ago when he was, you know, Mayo's obviously had a great spring. I kind of, you know, why does Ryan O'Hearn just get to play over Kobe Mayo? Is kind of what I was thinking when I was looking at that, because it's just, if I'm in that front office, we're all sitting around, it's like, who here thinks Ryan O'Hearn's a better big league hitter than Kobe Mayo is? Like, that's a question I'm sure they've discussed.
Sure.
Where do you sort of see Mayo fitting in with this O's club? And what have you thought about his spring training?
I think it's options. And, you know, they've gotten something out of Ryan O'Hearn, obviously. So good for them. But I think he is probably better as like a replacement, your first sort of replacement option that, you know, you can get some upside, or he's a guy that you could package with somebody else as like a ready-made big leaguer and some sort of an odd trade, right? Sometimes that stuff happens. Yeah, I think the difference is Mayo is still what? This is going to be his Rule 5 eligibility year in December because he was a 2020 high school draftee, if I'm not mistaken. So there's still clock. And there's kind of, I guess, a logjam between third and first. But I really think they, you know, they want him playing third base every day. And I would assume that probably means that he starts the season in AAA. But you look at it, he had a pretty good AAA sample size too.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and then it's a matter of like, where does he fit in with Westberg and Holiday and Gunner? Yeah. So it's got to be, you know, DH or first base. And I think for a lot of us that follow this organization and just think it's a very fun experiment to keep a close eye on, I don't know. I've kind of hoped that like, hey, does like Mountcastle get moved at some point and that opens up a spot for him, you know, or Westberg is another guy that gets moved out or whatever, because they do have a lot of redundancy. And then they have guys like Norby, who I think could start for a lot of major league teams right now. Maybe he isn't going to be a star, but is at least a 45, if not a 50 or better. So it's just kind of just, there's such a log jam of talent from years of good drafting.
Yeah. Norby seems to me of their better prospects, he seems like the most obvious trade chip to me. Whenever they need to get their next big leaguer.
And they have major league guys who are pretty good major leaguers who have control, who may not be better options, like a Mountcastle than maybe what Kerstad could be, or at least like the cost of it, like when you have arbitration dollars and everything mixed in. So it's just a really interesting position they're in, because they have so many tradable assets, even outside of their top 30 list. There's still a lot of very tradable assets on the major league roster.
I'm sure they want to get rid of's the wrong phrase, but you know, Mountcastle, you said, even guys like Urias and Mateo, who don't, like, people listening probably like, well, no, they don't have any value. I can tell that Orioles don't want to just give these guys away. And I know other teams are probably really shorting them on their offers, because they know that there's a logjam here, and they, like, why would we give you 100 cents on the dollar for Ryan Mountcastle when we know that you would like to trade him, you know? So
exactly.
Colton Cowser has been fantastic this spring. I love Cowser. I really hope that he finds a place to play on this team.
I want to say this too. Like, I feel like he's still a very divisive player. Like, I've heard, like, in the offseason, it seemed like there was a great divide on, like, sort of where you fell on Colton Cowser. And I think that was in the public space, and it was certainly among scouts and front office people as well, where some were like, keep him where he is, you know, we love this kid. And there were others that were like, meh, a little bit more, you know, weary of him. So I'm still all in, and I think he continues to hit his way onto this roster. So another guy that I think is movable, you just mentioned it, is Austin Hayes.
Yeah.
Who still has, I think, some control left as well. Like, he's a guy that I think some teams would be like, yeah, we would definitely take, you know, Austin Hayes. I mean, we saw recently retired Cole Calhoun get jobs for like a decade after he was past his best self. And I think it's a very similar sort of profile. So agree. I can't wait till Cowser gets full time at bats, because I think he is a legitimately very good hitter, well-rounded. There's contact, there's great approach. And I think he'll continue to grow into more power and can play three different outfield spots. I mean, he's not a slouch as an athlete either.
Yeah, his 77, Cowser's 77 plate appearance sample last year, just, I would just throw it completely out the window in the big leagues. You know, what he did at Triple A, I think, tells more of a story. And Do you have any concerns that they would platoon him early on if there is a spot that opens up?
Yeah, I think that could certainly be a possibility, just because of the amount of talent that they have. Like, they do have the ability to do stuff like that. He is left-handed, but I think for me, sometimes with these younger players, and more often than not, I'm thinking from a dynasty lens, mm-hmm. kind of okay with that. It's why I like move league, daily moves leagues, because yeah. you can move guys in and out. But he is going to get the strong side of the platoon, and it's just a matter of how many at-bats does he see against lefties. And I think he has something very similar to what I've brought up about Evan Carter this offseason, and that's he walks a lot against lefties still. Like, maybe he doesn't have the same power, but a lot of left guys struggle against left-handers. I think he's got defensive skills. He's a solid base runner. And he's still going to work 5 to 6 pitches per at bat against a left-hander, and has a really good shot of walking in, you know, a large percentage of those. So, you know, I think that's the thing, where he maybe doesn't have a ton of impact against left-handers, but it's not like he's somebody where, yeah, you got to platoon him because he's only walking 7% of the time, 8% of the time, and is striking out more against left-handers. I think you'll see, you know, you see the walks with Cowser. That's always been one of the strengths of his game. And I'll mention just in his defense too, something that it's the same with Mason Winn. Guys can struggle at the major league level. And I think I learned this lesson the first time with Kyle Tucker, where like the slash line was bad, but then you kind of looked and you were like, hey, it's a good O-swing, really good O-swing. And it's the same with Cowser, 24.5%. He's not chasing out of the zone. Zone contact, not great, but 83.9%. You can get by with that. 75.5% overall contact, 9.9% swing and strike rate. So, like, you know, I think there was some bad luck as well. And he still had at least underlying plate skills there that show me that he's a major leaguer and wasn't getting overmatched. It wasn't like, oh crap, this guy had a 69% like zone contact rate or something wild and was chasing 35% of the time outside of the zone. You know, those are the kind of guys that I really worry about, because I don't think like they don't have that approach sort of pillow in terms of like that cushion when things are going bad, that they're still going to work some counts and maybe see a pitch. You know, the more pitches you see, the more mistakes you see. That's kind of how it works. It's why not swinging correlates to ex-WOBA and sort of all those predictive metrics. And a big part of it is you walk more when you swing less, but also you make pitchers throw more pitches and there's more opportunities to make mistakes. And, you know, a pitcher makes 5 mistakes in a 6-inning start, they can give up 5 home runs, 5 really hard hit balls. And that's runs on the board. And I think it's like, we forget the tightrope that these pitchers walk. So as a hitter, your advantage is to put some pressure on him, right? So I think he's a guy that at least does that. And there's major league value in that.
Yeah, Cowser had a 175 BABIP in the big leagues last year, 0 infield fly balls. You were talking about the swing decision metrics. Yeah, I think he's big league ready. We'll see. It could be a thing where it's frustrating for fantasy managers, especially in weekly leagues, because they do just have an embarrassment of riches. And I don't think there's really much Cowser could gain from headed back to AAA. So maybe they just find a strong side job for him where he even sits against some righties, just because they have a lot of guys. But excited to see what Cowser can do. Paul Skeens, man. I think he's ready. I think he's ready for the majors. Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah, and I was around Pirate City yesterday. I didn't see him, and they had all 4 teams out there. I was kind of asking around, trying to see if I could maybe get a backfield game, because he's in minor league camp, right? I don't know if he's going to continue to pitch in major league games or not. I get the feeling that he's going to have a very short minor league career. I think we are talking 3 starts to maybe 6, and part of that might be like, I almost wonder if they opt, like if they promise the gate to these teams in the minors. Like, we will, because like a guy like that could, like a big deal like that can literally cover a team's, like, you know, nut for the entire year. Like, they can be in the black because of a game like that. Like, I remember that New Hampshire, who I go to all the time, and it's never super busy. I remember the folks that worked there telling me, like, we cover all of our, like, we're in the black because of the Portland series and all the Red Sox fans that come into New Hampshire to see the Red Sox prospects. And, like, we sell out all those games. And that's what covers us for a year. So I almost kind of wonder if that's like what it is. That's my like deep-rooted conspiracy theory. But I think at the end of the day, it's prudent for them not to chase the prospect promotion incentive pick because they're going to be picking at the top of the draft anyway. I think they could be sneaky and could finish fourth and could be like an upside pick next year. I think they're a couple of years away. I do think they have a lot of talent on this team and do have some interesting pieces that if they get some health and some performance, they could definitely be a sneaky team, particularly in the first half. I don't think they're a playoff team. And I think it's more likely that they're picking in the top 10 again, which is fine. And getting that extra year from on Skeens' contract, I think, is a lot of value for them just in terms of having control of a player of that ilk. But also from a trade perspective, if years down the road you do decide to trade him and you have that extra year of control, it's, you know, a little bit more attractive, a few more players that they can get in. Let's hope that doesn't happen and that Pittsburgh actually moves forward and invests in this thing because they have some really exciting young players and they're going to get, you know, another one in this draft and then potentially again in 25. So they're set up really nicely. I think that they're kind of on the other side of it from the Orioles or from the Rangers where they don't really have an incentive to necessarily have Skeens up early. They could have them down until, let's say, May 1st. Have him up after that and, you know, maybe limit his innings a little bit. It wouldn't shock me if you see like the Bobby Miller, Walker Buehler kind of thing where he does like the 3-4 inning starts and then one like 6 inning start where he's just pumping it in your face and then right up to the major leagues and we see some Skeens. I was ready to draft him the other night in the DC that I did and we just missed out on him. But I was drafting him with no fear at all because I'm like, even if we don't have this guy for the first month, that's fine. You know, I'm looking for innings in July and August and September when the injuries start to really roll in, everything starts to get thin, especially in those 50 round drafts where there's no weight, no fab. So, I mean, I'm totally fine with that. I think it makes sense for the Pirates and he could be a dark horse guy for NL Rookie of the Year for sure. But there's no way this guy sees 50 innings in the minor leagues. No chance. I think he's ready to roll. Saw him the other night. It was only for an inning. He was ready to go. Just pumping 100 consistently. He blew away Enrique Bradfield Jr., who is a pretty good player and a pretty decent prospect who's seen some stuff. He's faced Skeens before in the SEC. He got chewed up like he had never seen him before. And we talked about the Jackson Holiday at bat. You know, throwing some heat, falls behind 3-1, and then gobbles up Holiday with a slider against the lefty, and then the changeup off the plate, which I think was really nice to see. I had also interviewed him earlier in the week in like a prospect media scrum call on Monday. And he had mentioned he's throwing a splinker, and it was something that he hadn't thrown before. So I actually think in my video, if you go back, I put the entire outing up and I marked all the pitches. It's like a 97 mile per hour two seam fastball. I don't have the movement data on it. I'd have to dig into it and see. I think that might have been the splinker because it's like a two seamer that he would say was kind of a splitter. So like that's a really interesting pitch to right handers if he has this thing that he can kind of work in on your hands and so throws a little drop and is coming in at crazy velocity for the movement. So he's not going to miss a lot of bats with the fastball. That's the knock on Skeens, but I don't think that's dissimilar from like Bobby Miller, who we've seen have some success at the major league level without missing a whole lot of bats with his fastball, but has some good secondaries, has some stuff, has that poise and kind of fiery bulldog mentality in the mound, which Skeens definitely has. Like I think that there's like he's borderline like ready to bark. Sometimes I think like after he struck out Holiday, he was pumped and you could tell he didn't want to come out of the game. He could have got 7 innings.
I love that. I love, especially when it's like a 6-6 pitcher that has that type of attitude. I just love that. I'm with you 100%. I think draft Skeens today. And the one thing you're worried about, or the biggest thing you're worried about, is him just getting injured somehow before he comes up. But yeah, I don't think you have to worry about like, oh, I'm going to be stashing him for, into mid-May. I'm with you. And I think the reason they didn't let him compete for a spot in camp is because he would have won a spot in camp, and they didn't want a spot in camp.
So. I had a scout, and not just like a regular scout, like a high-ranking guy on the pro side who has a title, say that exact thing when I asked about Skeens yesterday, was that they didn't want him competing for a spot because he would have won a spot. So
one thing that always comes up, I'm going to ask you about Jared Jones and Bubba Chandler here with the Pirates. Just tough to beat that top three in terms of pitching prospects leading a system. But people always, whenever I talk about Pirates pitching prospects or even just Pirates prospects in general, they still have that sort of stink that people associate with them, with like Glasnow and Cole and Musgrove and all these guys that were better once they got out of there. Am I crazy for thinking that it's actually not a complete disaster in Pittsburgh and we can have some faith in these three pitchers? Like, I know one,
you know, there's a lot of talent. It's a talented system. There's a lot of solid players, and they've brought some solid players up to the major leagues. Henry Davis looks like he's better. You know, I'm not going to put it up there with like a good development org, but I've kind of put the yellow on it versus the red being bad or the green being great. They're kind of in that sort of mid-tier yellow area. And, you know, I think Ben Charrington for me is, you know, I'm not a Red Sox fan, but certainly live in the Boston market and I follow the team enough and read about the Red Sox for years. I think Charrington was the best GM that they've had. I liked him better than Dombrowski. And frankly, he built that team and he's always had a track record of drafting well. He was in Toronto where they sort of built this young core with Bichette, obviously Vlad and all those guys. And then moved to Pittsburgh and we can see how this young core has come together. So, yeah. And I think there's like some sneaky peripheral guys like a Braxton Ashcraft who throws smoke and has a great slider and looks like he could be a weapon in the eighth or ninth inning, like right away. And, you know, they have some other talented guys.
I know Eno loves Harrington or Thomas Harrington. I know.
Yeah.
I
think I haven't seen Harrington yet, but I will. I think, you know, Harrington's obviously pretty good. And, you know, they have some guys that are kind of close to the majors as well. And then like some interesting sort of players, like guys like Gorski and others that I think maybe aren't stars, of course, or even average regulars, but might be like solid role guys. Like, I think they have something there. I think they sort of need that big hitting star to emerge. Yeah. They probably hope that's O'Neill Cruz, but they need the main guy. They have a lot of the other guys already in the lineup, but they need that big bat. It's kind of like why it's like you wish you could have gotten Wyatt Langford and Paul Skeens, you know. But the, you know, the rotation's coming together a little bit too. And, you know, we'll talk about some of their other arms.
Yeah.
But like Solomon and some of these guys we didn't see in the prospect game are pretty good players as well.
So I love Bubba Chandler, and I was very excited to see that you got eyes on him, and he looked pretty good. And obviously I know we both like Jared Jones. You haven't gotten to see Jones this spring. Why don't you kind of just discuss Jones just in terms of his prospects as a big league starter this year? I think he'll be up in the big leagues for the majority of the season, even if he doesn't make the rotation. And then Chandler, I think, is kind of like a dark horse for number one pitching prospect in the game a year from now.
Yeah, I think if it comes together for Bubba in terms of just consistently commanding the slider curveball thing that he's throwing and the changeup, and all three of those are working, he's got it. He's got the big league body. He's got a great operation. He goes with the full windup, you know, over the head, but that keeps your rhythm. He stays on time. I think the arm stays on time consistently. The fastball was commanded really, really well for the most part. I know he did unfortunately hit Creed Williams on the elbow with a 98-99 mile per hour fastball. But Williams was kind of crowding the plate a little bit, and he did pitch him inside. So, you know, maybe like it's not pinpoint yet. I think that can come. He's really athletic. I think he's going to get stronger. This looks like a guy that could sit like in his peak years, 97 to like, you know, 98 as a starter with, you know, two breaking ball shapes and a changeup that's at least average or better. He almost kind of reminds me a little bit, and maybe this is a bad comp, but like Josh Beckett, like it kind of like, and I don't know what Beckett's fastball shape was like. I don't know if he was getting popped like that, but like similar, like kind of rhythmic delivery. He's he's a better body than Beckett actually. Like Beckett was kind of bulky at the end, but like the young Beckett, like when he first came up with the Marlins, like great stuff. You know, and like times
a more athletic Beckett.
Probably takes better care of himself too. So, but I mean, like, I think people kind of forget, they think about Beckett at the end, but like those first 5 to 6 years of Josh Beckett were really, really good.
Yeah.
And I mean, he like, I think that 2007 year, he lost the CC for the Cy Young Award, but was great that season. And I think, you know, he could be kind of like, kind of what I see. I see another guy that's like a starter that could maybe be a number two, number one, depending upon the quality of your rotation. But I think there's front end stuff there. It's the command issue. If he doesn't have command, then he's an easy one to close and be like a lights out all-star, you know, every year kind of reliever. But I think that's serious talent. And then as for Jones, I don't see how he doesn't make this rotation at this point, right? They're playing a game with Skeens. I think at this point, 22 years old, there's only so many bullets. He's another guy that was a 2020 high school draftee. So he's Rule 5 eligible in December. So you're going to have to put him on the 40-man roster anyway. Putting him on the 40-man roster now, he's going to pitch his way into that rotation to hold it. Guys ahead of him are like Louis Ortiz. I saw Marco Gonzalez pitch against the Baltimore lineup in the major league game. And I mean, he's up there throwing 90, 92 with like command, but it's like, it's still Marco Gonzalez. You want that guy as like a number five. I think that Jones is going to work his way up this rotation, like Martin Perez, and it's going to be Keller, Skeens, Jones, Gonzalez, and then Ortiz or Perez or whoever sticks around. But I think these young guys are going to push their way into this rotation. And, you know, I think the top of the rotation with Keller and Skeens and Jones, Chandler shortly potentially, that looks really good. Salamento isn't too far away either. So there's a lot brewing in terms of the arms in Pittsburgh. And we could see some of these guys in the major leagues this year. Jones is a lot of fun for me. He's like kind of the type of pitcher that I've been into for a lot of years. It's not a great archetype to develop starters. You'll always find stuff with these guys. You'll always find major leaguers. I think it's a great profile, like with the underrated guys. He's a little bit bigger than typically these low like release, but he's still shorter, small on the smaller side, but is strong, generates an insane amount of velocity from a lower release height, gets really flat vertical approach angle on the fastball. And when he eats the top of the zone, it's even flatter. He gets hop there from an unusual arm slot. For his body, gets pretty good extension. He's athletic, and it's a nasty slider too. So, you know, it's sort of like a fastball slider, baby strider sort of a plan of attack. And it's just a matter of like, what are the other, you know, what's the third pitch look like? How is he consistently getting out lefties? But for this rotation, I think he's one of the better options and just has the ability to eat, particularly against right-handed batters. I think he's just going to dominate.
That was Jeff talking about Jared Jones of the Pirates, who looks like he is poised to make that opening day rotation. We got to head to a message from our sponsors, but when we come back, I'm going to ask Jeff about an outfield prospect I've taken in each of my last two high-stakes drafts. So keep it tuned here. All right. So obviously our sponsor is Fantrax. Love having them as a sponsor. The Tout Wars Draft and Hold League mercifully wrapped up today. But one thing I've forgotten to mention about what makes Fantrax such a great place to do your dynasty leagues is that it's where the most serious dynasty players play. So when you sort by roster percentage or recent pickups, you're actually looking at kind of the market of prospects. Case in point, Logan Evans of the Mariners. I've been getting questions. I've been hearing reports. He's been a big name over the past week or two, and he's already rostered in 3% of Fantrax leagues. Not a guy that was rostered, I'm sure, in hardly any Fantrax leagues a few weeks ago. It's where everyone who's serious about dynasty plays over at Fantrax. Sign up for free today and be entered to win an official MLB signed jersey from Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Simply go to Fantrax.com/RotoWire and sign up today. That's Fantrax.com/RotoWire. Fantrax, the home of fantasy sports. It's officially fantasy baseball season, and it's time for MLB Best Ball on Rival Fantasy. That's right. Rival Fantasy now has Best Ball. Full season lobbies are live now until opening day with both fast and slow drafts. Then weekly and daily drafts will be available from opening day through the end of the World Series. Best Ball is all the fun of the draft without the season-long management. Enter a league, draft your squad, and the app does the rest. No need to set your lineup or make waiver moves. The highest scorers at the end of the regular season will be the winners. Invite your friends and start drafting for the 2024 fantasy baseball season today. Sign up at joinrival.com/rotowire for a $200 deposit match and $25 in free entries. Welcome to the future of fantasy sports. Welcome to Rival Fantasy.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Okay, Jeff. Teased it there. I have taken Seidan Rafaela of the Red Sox in each of my last two high stakes drafts. You know, he's someone we were talking about in Florida as kind of Boston's very, very clear center fielder of the future. And, you know, I knew he would come to camp with, like, you know, I knew he was going to stick around in big league camp for a while. But he's been better than I'm sure a lot of people expected just in terms of his play in the games, specifically at the plate. Everyone knows about Rafael's defense, but you can elaborate on that if you want. 25% strikeout rate, 8% walk rate for Rafaela in the spring, 3 homers, 2 steals. This is kind of like, if you're a Gold Glove center fielder and you're doing that in an effort to make the team, it seems like maybe you should make the team.
Yeah, and I think the thing with Rafaela is I have some history dating back to short season in 2019. He was in Lowell. And was a guy that stuck out to me and former Twins scout Jason Panini as like a guy that we actually, I think, put on our first Prospects Live Red Sox top 30 list. And that looks really, really good now.
Yeah.
He was just a guy that was grinding on at bats. He had great bat to ball skills, had a big swing for a little guy, and was a real gamer. And at that point, he was playing second, third base, shortstop. And then he's just progressed. He's progressed as a hitter. They challenged him by moving him to center field. And not only did he take to the job, he became the best center fielder defensively in their organization, full stop, right? This is one of the best defensive center fielders that I've watched. And I've seen PCA. I think he's right on par with that guy. He's right on par with Victor Scott. Has tremendous speed. Plays the game with his hair on fire. I think he's somebody that's going to endear himself to whatever fan base he's with. Obviously, it's the Red Sox here. Definitely a guy that Bostonians are going to love. He chases a lot. There's going to be some strikeouts. But if you look throughout his career, he's kind of improved the contact and adjusted and gotten better as he's moved up, like a second time at Double-A. Like, he's always around 20%. I think he's going to stabilize somewhere in the low 20s. Just not a walk rate guy. He's going to take a hit in OBP leagues. He'll take a hit in some points formats because of that. But he does have the capability of stealing 30 bases, 100%. If he sees 600 plate appearances, I think you can bank on 30 steals.
Yeah.
The batting average could fluctuate depending on, just the approach. But he's always been a guy that historically has hit like 270 or above at most of his long-term stops. Hit 278 in 71 games at Double-A in 2022, followed that up by hitting 294, hit 312 in Triple-A, then it was 241. So the bat to ball ability is not the issue. It's just he's a guy that likes to swing it. And I think that will, with age, that typically matures, that guys typically get into a little bit more of an approach to see some more of these pitchers. So there could be some peaks and valleys. I think the defense is there, and he's quick. He's twitchy. He's going to steal bases, and he swings for home runs for sure. He's a right-handed hitter that most of his power is to his pull side when he ambushes a fastball or is a little in front on a secondary pitch. So he's kind of got the perfect home park for that, where he's going to pelt a lot of balls off the wall, and he's real quick. Real good second gear. When he turns around first, he can get the third on a misplayed ball. So it's just that little sort of stuff. I think he could be a solid player. And I know I was kind of pounding the table for him when we were talking out there that, I think he's the guy, and I'm not even that concerned about what happens with Jarren Duran, because I think he just does so many things well. One being the defense, that, he's going to endear himself to management and his teammates, and particularly the pitchers that
I was a little lower on Rafaela in terms of quickly moving him up back in 2022 when he was sort of first becoming that sort of clear, he's definitely a top 200 prospect, but where does he slot? And then I sort of had an epiphany early in 2023 about, like, I wanted to stop kind of holding his approach against him holding it against him to the point where I was just kind of dismissive, because it just, there are certain guys where it just works with this super aggressive approach. Obviously you need big time bat speed, but he's got that. And when a guy's just always super productive in the upper levels, mind you, and you've got that defense, like you laid it out, like he's got flaws in his game. They're easy to see, mostly related to sort of on base percentage issues. But I just think, and like, if you want to draft speed, you really got to look at the young guys, right? Like if you want to get 30 steals after pick 200, if it's coming from an old guy, it's coming with a lot of other issues. And so these are the types of guys that can give you a quantity in that category. You know, another one is Victor Scott. But I think to me, he's a tier above Rafaela in terms of stolen base upside, but a tier below Rafaela from a home run impact standpoint.
Yeah. I think there's still some power there with Scott. I mean, this isn't like a Juan Pierre kind of player. He did have 9 home runs last year. It's just like I'd say his peak years, he'll hit 10, 11.
Yeah.
You know, and the power started to show up a little bit more in Arizona against left-handers because he is a left-handed hitter. So he's got the platoon advantage there. Not the biggest guy, but like a super athlete, of course. And he steals bases at an insane rate, one of the best base stealers you'll ever see. But he has really good contact skills. I think that's played out. He's hit 367 with a 457 on base percentage in spring training. He hit 323 in Double A last year over 66 games, the 373 on base percentage, and 282 in High A. And by the way, that's the Midwest League, which the first month and a half of that season is like, it's like 15 degree wind chills like outside. There's guys playing in like the ski mask hood type of undershirts. You know what I'm talking about? Like they're wearing that. And they probably have like 3 layers underneath. So the fact that he's hitting, doing what he was doing in the Midwest League, has never had WRC plus below 115. Offensively, he's very productive. Outside of that, like I said, I think he has just enough power that it's really, really dangerous. And he could be a leadoff hitter, and he could steal 90 bases. Like this could be what we hoped Billy Hamilton was. Like this could be a guy who actually like has a defensive ability, can steal bases, but has enough power and enough hit tool and enough on base ability that the stolen base numbers are, you know, come to fruition and they're there for a whole bunch of years. He's got defensive value. Like I said, he does get on base enough and work counts. And even his bunting is a weapon. He's an unbelievable bunter. Mm-hmm. He hit like 700 on bunts this year and had like 39 attempts in 2023. And I watched just the tape of it on Synergy, just set up all of his bunts. And it was placing it like in that grassy knoll between the lumbering first baseman and the lumbering pitcher. And my boy was just running, you know, 80 speed out of the left-handed batter's box. And it's, you know, good luck, man. Bien suerte on that one. You're not getting that guy. He's a great bunter. And I think because of how he runs, it's sort of another tool for him, but it's not his only skill. So he'll sneak up on you and do it, but you got to worry about, you know, leaving something over the plate that he can, you know, mash to his pull side or hit to the gap and, you know, ends up on third. He's a really exciting player. And I think the current rules and setup, this is just, I mean, it's tailor made for a guy like this.
Yeah. That's what I love about him, is that he's not afraid to just pull the ball into the gap. Now, do we think he starts in center field over Dylan Carlson?
You know, I think he is their best option. I think there's more upside here because he has an 80 tool. And wouldn't it be awesome to have the 70 defender in center field with an 80 run tool, with, you know, a 60 defender at shortstop with an 80 throw tool? Like you just have all these huge, loud tools, you know, in your lineup. With some really exciting young players mixed in with some of the wily veterans that you have, I think that makes for a fun lineup for St. Louis. So for me, yeah, I think Dylan Carlson at this point, like, he would have to set the world on fire in order to keep that job. And I'm sure they've been trying to deal him and probably haven't been able to.
But they probably missed their chance.
I would think so at this point.
Carlson's hitting .243 with a .282 OBP in the spring.
And a couple of homers.
It would just be so uninspired, I think, to be like, nope, Carlson's our center fielder. Like, would anyone on the team other than Carlson be pumped about that? Like,
I don't think so.
Okay, so yeah, Victor Scott, Seydon Rafaela, you know, after, I assume after pick 200, you never know, but after pick 200, you know, if you're looking for 30 plus steals, I think Rafael and Scott is probably where you might want to look. Chase DeLauder, he's obviously playing in Arizona with the Guardians, so you haven't seen him live in the spring, but I know you've seen DeLauder at his best as an amateur, and yeah. DeLauder is hitting .476. Actually, hold on. I know he just had it up because he hit another homer today. I think he hit another
now four in the spring.
Yeah. So
is he hitting 500 yet?
Yeah. So now he's hitting .520 with a .1640 OPS. You know, those are like the DeLauder produces in such a non-Guardian style way offensively that's another one where it would just be kind of depressing if they sent him down and they're like, well, we've decided he's not ready. And we've decided that Esteban Floreal, Ramon Laureano, and Miles Straw are ready. So DeLauder, like, are you surprised by just, I mean, he, like, look at his stats. He's always been at these stops for such a short while because he missed time with the injury. He's a little older. Like, this dude, you know, kind of almost on a Wyatt Langford level in terms of just everywhere he goes, he just produces at a monster clip. And he hasn't really met a level yet where pitchers can contain him.
Hey, man, I mean, I was there when as my friend Brian Sikowski now at Duke would say, I was there when the gospel was written. You know, I was there in the Cape when he had his breakout and, you know, was able to bring that video to the world and talk about him. And then, like, yeah, I can remember I was in the middle of buying a car when he had that really rough game against FSU. He struck out a bunch and people were like chewing him up. It was like two tough lefties in a hostile environment with like zero protection in that James Madison lineup. And it was just like, everybody calm down. I thought he was a top five pick then. I think he was a top five pick now. I think he's a top 25 prospect in the game. You know, you want to rank him 8, fine. I mean, you want to rank him 20, fine. I think he's going to be a multi-time all-star. I think he's going to hit 25 home runs. I think he's going to hit for a good average. And be a really good right fielder. I think he's exactly what that team needs. They kind of need a guy with impact, with the capability of doing damage. And by the way, I mean, he has more walks than strikeouts in the spring as well. Yeah. So it's not like he's just on this Chris Shelton burner. He's showing the underlying skills of a seasoned big leaguer. So I know it's spring training, but ever since I saw this guy in the Cape, the biggest hurdle with this guy has always been health. So if you have him healthy and he's ready to go, I say get him up in the big leagues. Like Daniel Espino, guys, just get him up. It's just like get him up there. There's no reason. Will Brennan has options. You can option Will Brennan down. Ramon Laureano still has two options left. You could option him to AAA and still keep him on your 40-man roster. Get him on the 40-man and let's go for it. You know, I think he should be there. They're starting everyday right fielder.
And I wouldn't pick him to win AL Rookie of the Year, but, you know, like Kyle Manzardo was never winning AL Rookie of the Year.
No.
Like DeLauder, like he's at least, I'd probably put him as like a top 8 candidate if he were to break camp on the big club. So I got to see.
It seems unlikely because, you know, DeLauder is a guy who's 2 years away from Rule 5 eligibility, but it's possible. I mean, it's a wide open division, and if Cleveland thinks they can win it and have the number one pick, winning the division and getting the number one pick in the draft that summer is a good goal. And I mean, I don't know. Who are you counting out in that division? Like,
just by default would probably finish top like three. They're going to finish ahead of the Royals and White Sox.
The Royals are my sneaky team in that division. I think the Royals might just have enough to make it like all kind of work, but we'll see. They'll need Bobby Witt Jr. to be big this year, and Vinny Pasquantino has to
stay. Hey, don't put this all on Bobby.
He's got to be a huge. Vinny's got to be healthy. MJ Melendez has got to hit. Hunter Renfro kind of has to have like just a good solid 50 season from Hunter Renfro. And I like their pitching. I mean, like Reagan's, regardless of draft and all that sort of stuff, but just like as a major league starter, Reagan's is kind of interesting. Waka was good last year. Seth Lugo was good last year. Brady Singer is your number four. You could do a lot worse than that. It's kind of fun. Mikel Garcia is kind of a sneaky good little player. And like the Twins aren't that good. The Tigers aren't that good. And the Guardians aren't that good. So I feel like it's almost like a four-team race. There's a shot, because there's teams that are going to lose their division that could maybe come in second or even win the Central. Like, that's how bad the AL Central is.
DeLauder, who knows if he makes the team or not.
He should see time this year, though.
He's going to rake until he's up if he gets sent down. But I sort of subtweeted Derek Hardy the other day. I absolutely love Derek Hardy. The bad X is just a extremely valuable tool in season, especially for me. But I think he was just off base when he was kind of comparing Wyatt Langford's spring to like Jordan Walker and Jared Kelenic's springs of the past as sort of like, these are examples why you don't do it. I think to me, like this spring, James Wood kind of had the Jared Kelenic, Jordan Walker spring where it was like a little ahead of schedule and really loud, but just there wasn't the same sort of market. Like you didn't see Wood shooting up into the 15th round of drafts because of it, for whatever reason. I don't know why people haven't reacted the same way to Wood that they did to Walker and Kelenic, but I thought Wood would have been a better example of sort of like just don't overreact what's happening in the spring. You know, a lot of times prospects will underwhelm after that. I don't think Wood's definitely going to underwhelm, but that's kind of more the caliber of prospect that I think he is rather than Wyatt Langford, who I am just extremely confident in Wyatt Langford having a good year. But Wood's hitting .325, .460 OBP, three homers, three steals. He's walking a ton. The strikeout rate's pretty low. Like, is this a guy that is putting things together, or is this just a guy that's had a hot 50 plate appearances and we might not see until like July?
You know, we'll see.
Or something in between.
We'll see. You know, I think the Nationals could certainly do it if they wanted to. There's nobody in that outfield that should really be keeping him out of the outfield. Like, we're talking Victor Robles and center, and a mix of Jesse Winker and like Eddie Rosario in left. Of course, Lane Thomas in right is fine. He's got the most upside, and it certainly seems like he's taken a step forward from just an approach bat to ball standpoint. Their minor league parks too, I think, should be stated, like, are some of the worst to hit in of any system. Like Wilmington, their high A park is really hard to hit homers out of. I was in a call with him, Skeens, and Jackson Holliday, and Jackson Holliday had actually recalled a ball that would hit clean out of that park. And was like, that park is so hard to hit balls out of. It's like insane, blah, blah, blah. This guy's like power is nuts. I asked him directly, like, what have you been working on? The strikeout rate had cut down. And he said, just shrinking the zone even more, focusing on the pitches that I know in the zones that I can hit, identifying it out of the hand, and just sticking with my plan. So I do think there's been some growth from that perspective. The bat, like the power at the point of contact has always been enormous. And he has good angles. He's a super good athlete. Like, I think people see the 6 foot six height and think, you know, 234 and think that he's like this bigger kind of lumbering guy. He's built like a, you know, like a small forward, power forward in the NBA that can run the floor. Like, he's really wiry. He's kind of almost skinny, like not bad skinny, but like broad shoulders. But like, you could tell this guy can probably add another 30, 40 pounds over the next like 10 years as his body matures, and he's going to hold it. And he's a good athlete. And he's strong defensively. I think their best, they want to bring their best 26. He's one of their best 26. And I think he's probably one of their best nine. So when the Nationals decide to do that, we'll see. But he's another guy that's been hitting, and he's been hanging around as well. He has not been demoted to minor league camp yet, as far as I know. So we'll see. I think at worst he's probably in AAA, and then if he hits, which would hitting in AAA with the auto zone, I'm pretty confident the numbers are going to look pretty good. He'd be up in May.
Yeah. I shouldn't have framed it as opening day or July, because I do think it's opening day or not too long after opening day with James Wood. Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, they've got some guys hanging around that outfield that I'm sure they want to get a look at, or maybe they even promised time to when they signed them. But I think he will be playing every day at some point this season, and some point probably in the first half. Gavin Stone, I know, another Arizona guy, but he's just mowing down the Cactus League, and I love how good his stuff is looking right now compared to like May, June of last year.
Yeah,
just seems like he's someone who definitely put the time in, not only in the middle of last season, but this offseason as well.
And he's a guy that's shown the ability to change his pitch mix, add a pitch, make a change midseason. Even 2022, he changed his slider from like a cutter to like more of a sweeper, and then kind of switched it back to something that's like more gyro-y. So he's always kind of messing around with different pitches. I think he just got, it seems like the body looks a little stronger. I think the mechanics maybe cleaned up a little bit, but it seems like he's kind of getting behind the fastball more. So he's kind of got that hop back that he kind of missed last year, a little bit more power and velocity as well. And he's a guy where I think like the fastball quality walks a thin line where he kind of needs that hop. He needs that extra velocity. And all of a sudden it goes from a 45, 50 pitch to like a 60. And it plays well off of that changeup. So the value of that changeup is being able to play off of that good fastball. He has that. He has enough feel for spin that I think he could navigate lineups and just be really dangerous. And he's also one of these guys where his changeup is good enough. If his fastball is working, then he can throw that thing right on right too. So, yeah, I'm happy to see it. And I'm glad to see that he got the number five spot in the rotation.
Yeah, and obviously his last outing was not in the Cactus League. His last outing was, I think, against
Korea.
Team Korea, yeah.
Yeah.
So, but he looked great. I got a couple other guys listed here before we get to some guys that have impressed you that were not on my sheet. But just Thomas Sejesi, second baseman with the Cardinals, who Jordan Montgomery trade. You want to talk about a trade that worked out for both parties? I think Cardinals did very well with the prospects they got back, and the Rangers obviously needed Montgomery. So, Sejesi, you know, he hits 361 in the spring, 12.5% strikeout rate, 10% walk rate. He just hits, like, with the exception of 13 games at AAA last year, Sejesi just hits everywhere he goes. Bat first prospect, certainly, but Do you think the Cardinals have room for him to break in as an everyday second baseman sometime this season?
I think there's a possibility, especially if there's an injury. He's another guy that's going to be a 40-man roster guy this upcoming offseason, so he's kind of in that window where they could add him. We'll see. I think he's going to go back to AAA. He'll probably hit there. The unique thing about Sejacy is it's solid bat-to-ball skills. It's okay approach. The underlying like exit velocity data wouldn't blow you away. He's a sweet spot king. Like when we talk about like great angles, bat angles, consistently different pitches, just shows the ability to like hit things at optimal angles from like 10 to 25 degrees. He does it as well as anybody. He had one of the higher sweet spot rates. I think it was like 38-39% last season, like in the minor leagues among guys in the higher levels. We actually trust all the tracking on that. He's kind of has that like uncanny ability to just always make good contact. So I think it's going to work. You know, it may not be like, I don't think the upside is like superstar type of stuff, but could be a guy with solid batting average that hits a fair amount of home runs and a lot of doubles. And it's just like sort of your productive middle infielder utility guy in like a 12 team league.
Yeah, I think that's totally right. Like, and he's got to clear that bar. It's a thin margin for error when you're a second baseman like that who doesn't have plus power, isn't going to be a plus defender. So he's definitely going to have to hit. But you know, so far so good. The last sort of prospect of that ilk I want to ask you about quickly before we get to some of the guys you've been watching the past couple of days, Joey Loperfido with the Astros, still in big league camp, at least as of when we're recording this on Tuesday night. I think he's going to head to AAA to start the year most likely. But, you know, the nice thing about the Astros, if you're Loperfido, is if they think he can handle either center field, or if they think McCormick can handle center field, there's probably a spot for him at some point, assuming Jake Myers makes the team and doesn't set the world on fire, although Myers has had a really good spring training as well. So what do you kind of envision Loperfido being in the big leagues? Is he a guy that you see moving around? Is he a guy that you see just sort of settling in left? Or I don't know if he can handle center field every day, but like, where do you sort of see him fitting in with the Astros, and how ready do you think his bat is?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's going to be strikeouts. That kind of jumped at an alarming rate when he hit the higher minors. He's a really good athlete, but has kind of never been able to find a position. I know the organization has felt that center field is his best position, but they have a lot of center fielders coming up. They have, you know, Jacob Melton, who could play center and potentially right. They have Kennedy Corona, who won the minor league gold glove last year in the outfield, is one of the best center field defenders, outfield defenders in the minors. He's on the 40-man roster as well. So he's a guy that, you know, could potentially slide in and, you know, end up getting the opportunity maybe even before Loperfido. But the bat is there. I think he's an exciting fantasy player if he gets reps, because he's a dude that's had, you know, close to, or actually, no, he didn't. He had a 2020 season last year. I think that's a possibility. He can run. Like I said, he's a good athlete. He's a bigger guy. And when he gets a hold of one, he can definitely whack it. I mean, it goes far. He hits the ball hard. So kind of has that going for him. It's just a matter of like, are the bat to ball skills good enough? And, you know, is center field his best position? And, you know, is he the best option there? So that remains to be seen. He's interesting, but I would say that he's probably less of a priority than some of the other guys we've been talking about.
Very good. That was Joey Loperfido of the Astros we were talking about. All right, Jeff. So you've seen some very young, inexperienced prospects in Florida the past couple weeks and the past few days specifically. You sent me a list of four guys. I'm very excited to hear about all of them, but why don't you kind of just take it away? I don't know if you want to start with the mystery man.
Yeah.
Go start with the big name shortstop. Go over where you want to go.
Let's start with the mystery man, because he seems to be somebody who's gotten as much excitement on social media as anybody that I've tweeted about. And that is David Matoma. I had read about this guy's story. I didn't know anything about him as a player, and signed out of Uganda in 2023. And I guess as the story goes, is the Dodgers had a training or a development camp of some sort in Uganda. There were three really good players. Two of them signed with the Dodgers. Matoma was sort of ripped out of their grasp by the Pirates, as the story goes. And the facility was then shut down by MLB because I guess you can't have a facility there. So with that being said, this guy comes out. I'm with a couple of scouts. They don't even know who he was initially, and then said the name and then looked him up and said, oh, this is the guy from Uganda. We hadn't seen him. Pitched in DSL last year. The data was really good. Shout out to Dylan White. Shout out to RoboScout. RoboScout identified this guy last year.
Wow.
Dylan had actually written about it. I may have to like put that underneath it, but he had actually ID'd this guy last year. And some of it was based on the data. He was 95 to 96, touched 97, 17 to 19 inches of IBB, had a harder like gyro cutter type of deal at 85 to 88. Changeup that I saw was 7 IBB, 15 horizontal, which is good shape. And then had like a little gyro curveball at like -2, -3, 3 at like 82, 83. It was like nasty stuff. Like from an arsenal standpoint, on paper, that thing looks like he could be pitching in the big leagues now. He's undersized. He's probably 6 feet, maybe 160 pounds now, but I think he can put on some good weight, and then we'll see. But he's really, really interesting, and I just think the fact that we have like a truly intriguing prospect who also happens to be from Africa and developed there, I think makes it an even better story. So that's why what I live for is going to the ballpark, especially the backfields, and seeing players I didn't know about very, very much, or even really know the name before I showed up, and then like leaving and being like, hey, I get video on this guy. I saw him pitch a full inning. I got all the numbers, and I know a bit about this guy now. And that's kind of like the best feeling.
I'm not surprised at all that that's like your favorite part of the job, because that just sounds like the best. But so can teams just set up academies and just sign as many players as they can before MLB shuts it down? Like, how does this work?
I think it still was under international bonus pool rules. I don't know that much about it. I just know that there was a Dodgers camp or academy there that was then shut down. That's all that I know about the story. But maybe that's another story that we should dig into. But I don't. I only heard about it the last couple of days as I've started to dig in on this kid a little bit.
I mean, I always get – it's hard to rank pitching prospects who've only pitched in the DSL. Like, I know Jeter Martinez is a guy that a lot of people are excited about, obviously. I went back and looked. I was trying to look basically at the last, like, 10 years in the DSL at pitcher leaderboards and trying to see if – like, how many of the guys that dominate as age-appropriate pitchers in the DSL actually turn into big league, starting pitchers we're interested in. It was like Christian Javier, Carlos Martinez, maybe one other guy, but that was about it of the past 10 years. So yeah. It is really like finding a needle in a haystack. I don't know, like, where do you kind of value this guy in like a prospect universe if you're like borderline top 400, better than that?
Maybe he gets there. If you want to get real excited, you probably could. I wouldn't have him that high yet. I mean, he wasn't on our Pirates top 30. He only has like 9 innings.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what it is too, is like you got some of these guys who pitch in the DSL and they might have shown good stuff, but you didn't have those numbers and couldn't know. But I mean, hey, I like this was definitely better than a limber Santa who I saw in the backfields a couple years ago was throwing smoke. This was better than that, and this was like way louder. So you know, I think he's a top 900 guy. I just think he's probably like 500 to 700 right now versus 500 to 300. So
someone for people to keep an eye on.
Yeah. I think you're in a 30 team league. Like, yeah, go put a bid in on this guy and grab
him. You know that just since you talked about him and tweeted about him, people are just picking him up left and right, probably, right?
It's possible. We actually looked at Dan and I looked last night at the Fantrax ownership to check it in a week and see what it is.
All right. How about someone else who maybe is more kind of a top 100 caliber guy you've seen in the past?
Sure. I saw two shortstops today. I'll put them together. Roderick Arias and Arjun Namala. Arias did have a hit, hit one ball hard. He's an impressive looking athlete, switch hitter, you know, good swing from both sides. I got to see that. Solid at shortstop. Really impressive looking athlete. Like it's almost like a Fernando Tatis Jr. kind of build or something. He's not maybe that tall. I think he's listed 6'1". I think he's probably 6 feet, maybe 6'1". And then I saw Arjun Namala, who had at least one hit and then I think two walks, and I think he popped up. But he continues to – I've seen him now three times between FCL and this, and every at-bat's really good. He works deep into counts. He doesn't swing at junk. You rarely see, like, a swing where he's fooled, you know. And he's aggressive. Like, it's not like he's super passive. He will go out there and try to attack and, you know, barreled up a fastball today. The first time I saw him, he hit a double to the wall. Solid at shortstop. There's some range. I don't know if his hands and actions are always crazy, but it's a guy that's fairly new to baseball if you read his backstory. And I think the sky's the limit. He looked bigger and stronger, but in a good way. And he's kind of like that wiry skin, skinny, thin, high-waisted, sort of like strong core player that isn't going to get too bulky. Like he looks like a guy that could stick at shortstop. And he's like 6 feet or so. Broad shoulders, and I think he's already added a little bit of power. So he was an interesting one for sure. And then I saw one pitcher that had some buzz this offseason. The Yankees had drafted Kyle Carr, who's a left-hander, really good feel for spin. He's got like a ride cut four seamer, mixes in a great breaking ball with like ride and sweep, like a typical Yankee would, and showed some changeups as well. So it was an interesting pitch mix. He threw three innings. I think in the third inning that he was out there, he might have struck out four batters because it's these backfield games. So like if he strikes out like three guys and like 12 pitches, they'll be like, send another guy out there. Yeah. I think he actually had to get five outs in his final inning of work. So I'll have some of that on video. He's really interesting. And I think like more of like a 400 to 600 type of name. And if you have deep minors and in a deeper league, he might be a guy to maybe throw a waiver wire or fab bid out on. Cause it could be like a major league or maybe a reliever. I don't think he's a starter, but interesting for sure.
And you talked about Arias briefly.
Like I said, I talked about Arias and then Arjun Namala. I mentioned how Arias kind of reminds me of Tatis a little bit, but switch. And he's an interesting athlete for sure. I'm going to get another Arias game, I think, tomorrow against the Phillies. So he didn't do a ton today. So I'm hoping I get, I'm there with the open face and I am waiting every time he's up to bat for him to hit a double or a nuke shot, but just hasn't happened yet.
Awesome. So we've got David Matoma was the Pirates pitcher Jeff was talking about, Roderick Arias, Yankee shortstop, Arjun Namala, Blue Jay shortstop, and Kyle Carr, arm for the Yankees. Great stuff, Jeff. How you holding up? It's been a couple weeks in Florida for you total?
Total, because I was down there for 5 days. I've now been here, I think this is officially a week now. And then I still got, I guess I'm here for 22 days. So I'm here until April 3rd. So you can count from there. So the entire NCAA tournament. Are the brackets out? I haven't even looked at them yet.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't even looked at them yet.
Yeah. Brackets came out on Sunday. What's your go-to if you're trying to get some food, before a game, after a game down in Florida?
Sure. So I've kind of been adventuring around a little bit. I've been with my friend Dan here that you met. Shout out to Dan Food, Dan Greenberg. Excellent attorney here in the Dunedin Clearwater area. That's free advertising for him. He's very into plant-based stuff. So we've kind of been crushing a lot of interesting vegan options and plant-based. I had vegan pizza for the first time the other day. That was great. I had some great falafel today from a Lebanese place. That was really good. If I'm slumming it though, and I'm in the hotel room and I'm bouncing around, and Publix consistently, good pub sub, consistent, regardless of what you get. Also Wawa. I like Wawa up in Philly, so I mess with Wawa heavy. I grabbed a breakfast thing there yesterday. It was perfect. Good sandwiches, burgers. When I was in Palm Beach last year and I'd go to the park and then go to a major league game and cut video. Sometimes I need to eat at 1 a.m. and Wawa's always open and it's quality at 1 a.m. So I appreciate Wawa. There's another pizza place that's supposed to be really, really legit that I'm going to go check out tomorrow on my way back from the park. So I try to bounce around and try a lot of different eats, especially before my wife gets here and she limits the type of things that I can go and be adventurous with.
You're not gonna just go pick up some pub subs for the fam
when she's there? Would eat the pub subs. That's true. They would eat the pub subs. It's all the other things that I'm trying out and these other things that are different. But yeah.
Awesome. What do you gotta promote? BA. Everyone should be subscribed to BA, by the way.
Yeah, I mean we obviously have been updating the dynasty list. We've been updating the redraft list that we have. That's free and available to the public. Dylan's obviously in charge of all that, and he did the most recent update on the redraft list. We have to update it again, but we've been doing a stock watch every couple of weeks and making some adjustments in the dynasty rankings and then just sort of addressing why we're either moving a player up, down, or not at all based on an injury or a situation or whatever it might be. We've had suspensions already. There's been plenty of news the last couple of weeks to fill those suckers up. So we've been staying on top of that. And then, of course, a ton of spring training content is going to come out. All those articles talking about the prospects and major leaguers that have impressed scouts in spring training. I think those are always really valuable articles to read for fantasy because you might find a couple of hidden jewels. But just all of our typical stuff, all of our college baseball coverage, the draft coverage. Carlos just released his first mock draft. So there's a ton of stuff on the site and almost an overwhelming amount. All of our podcasts, of course. And then Josh and I have been doing a lot to build out our video. And I think we're going to have a channel potentially or an account specifically just for player videos. So there are going to be a lot of scouting stuff. I shot a lot of players in the last couple of days. And I can't wait to cut them up and get them up on the internet for everybody.
Awesome work you're doing, Jeff. Shouts to Dylan. Shouts to Baseball America. Shouts to Fantrax, our sponsor. And I'll be back with another episode next week.